From OETA, Oklahoma's home for public television.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Oklahoma News Report podcast. I'm the Oklahoma News Report's host, Rich Lenz. On this week's in-depth segment, we take a look at supply chains, interruptions in manufacturing, shipping in and out, and Oklahoma's potential for growth in the center of the nation. But first, some background on this week's newscast. Reporter Steve Shaw brought us a related story. While the images of huge container ships anchored offshore desperate to unload their cargo has garnered most of the attention at our nation's major ports, it is what's happening or not happening onshore that is contributing to America's supply chain shortage problem. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the biggest issue plaguing the supply chain is not what's going on around the ports. It's simply the fact there aren't enough truck drivers. We're roughly 60 to 80,000 drivers short. One CDL trucking school, American Truck Training, is trying to help, graduating roughly 400 students a year, but that's not enough. To meet demand, American Truck Training is preparing to open two new locations in Tulsa and Houston, Texas in January. And as you'll hear in this week's in-depth conversation, trucking isn't the state's only shipping route, but it is certainly paying well if you enjoy the open road. Susan?
Rich, we have the panel with all the information Oklahomans need to know about this important issue, and I'd like to introduce all of them to you right now. First, we have Ted Washington, who is a professor of supply chain management and of corporate business at OSU. We have Brent Kissling, who is the executive director of the Oklahoma Department of Commerce. Jim Newport, who is the president of the Oklahoma Trucking Association, and Daniel Grisham, deputy director of Tulsa Ports. Thank you to all for being with us today. I want to start with a little bit of information. When COVID first hit last year, demand for products being delivered boomed, even as transportation workers were also affected by quarantine and distancing regulations and masks. Shipping container from Asia to the United States jumped by nearly, is this right, 1,400% according to MIT?
Yes.
That seems phenomenal. Ted, I want to start with you. Oklahoma is right in the heart of the country. As things slowed down and prices climbed, how were retailers affected?
Yeah, that's a great point there. Not only did the shipping demand increase, but then it shortly thereafter decreased dramatically. So really, in Oklahoma, we saw first a spike in the abundance of product, right? And the longer the COVID pandemic went on, retailers and wholesalers began to deplete their inventory because they weren't sure how long this was going to go on. So they didn't want to buy inventory and have it just sit, right? So first we had a plethora of product and then it depleted. And if we think back, we can all remember the days when there was a rush on toilet paper and water and all those common products that we're used to having as a commodity, and all of a sudden, and sanitizers, and all of a sudden we had shelves depleted, right? Then followed by manufacturers trying to rush and create new products. If they were domestic, they were able to get that product out to us. But when you go back and you talk about overseas, where we receive a lot of product from Asia, we really started to run into a shortage. Right? The Asian bloc countries really locked down early and stopped manufacturing. Our ports, starting with the ports in Asia, they didn't have anyone working there. So now you have no product traveling overseas. And then later, we started to experience at our ports the impact of COVID, where we had a shortage of workers, a shortage of drivers, and you got a great panel that'll be able to speak to what was already a tight labor market when it came to drivers.
Well, major interruptions aside, a lot is going on this year. And I really, this is for anyone who wants to answer that. What are shipping prices looking like now?
Since I represent the Trucking Association, shipping involves this delicate, well-choreographed dance, if you will, of every link that is in the supply chain. So when we talk about those costs, it's not just trucking that is a part of it. So ideally, when you have this global supply chain that's working well, then all things are running well. Prices are normal. Supply and demand is normal. What we've seen in this disruption, of course, is now a place where every link of that chain, that's steamships, port terminals, port labor, distribution and warehousing, trucking, sometimes rail, workforce, all of those things need to be looking right now at optimization. How can we do better? What if any barriers are there? And to your question specifically, that disruption has increased prices on shipping.
Daniel, I want to come to you real quick since we're talking about shipping. You know, a lot of people may not know that Oklahoma has ports. First of all, if you could briefly explain that and then let us know how that's been affected, if it has been.
Yeah. So, you know, Tulsa Ports, we're here at Tulsa Port of Catoosa, is an inland port that's on the inland river system. We can move goods from Tulsa, Oklahoma to Pittsburgh, all the way down to the Gulf. On the intercoastal system on a barge. We also have rail access, both with a short line and a class one railroad. You know, for us, for our port, we don't handle premium cargoes and or intermodal. So we don't see the consumer side on that. We're majorly a large exporter. The products that we handle, chemical, you know, we were working during the pandemic. We were shipping, we were receiving. Those products are consumed. You know, we are a large agricultural exporter here at this port. Soybeans, wheat, liquid fertilizer, and then what we bring in is steel products, coil, beam, that distributes out to the multi-state region. But, you know, for us shipping, we're seeing other issues contributing that comes to factor that wasn't COVID related. That's just that now brings into that complication of what was already a problem before COVID is now impacting going forward.
Brent, you're with the Department of Commerce. How is Oklahoma commerce being affected by all of this?
Well, as the rest of your panel here mentioned, it has been a huge impact. And I haven't seen the specific numbers. I know Ted probably looks at these all the time, but just anecdotally, I was visiting a company down in Southeast Oklahoma just this last week that said they typically receive a container that costs about $3,000 and it's costing them about $30,000 right now if they get it in on time. But just to tell a quick story and share that it could be an opportunity for us as well. Whenever the pandemic first hit, we were struggling to try to purchase PPE as a state. We had one day's worth of PPE with masks, hand sanitizer, and all of that. And so we created a directory at the Department of Commerce of all of our manufacturers in Oklahoma that made PPE or had the capacity to make it. And we provided that to the Oklahoma Health Department, who used it in order to keep the dollars right here in Oklahoma as we purchased product. Then as we started reopening in June and July of last year, we turned that portal outwards. So that places of worship and schools and that kind of thing could purchase Oklahoma product, again, shortening that supply chain, because most of that supply was coming out of China or India or places like that, where it was very difficult to get it. Well, as we began catapulting out of the pandemic last fall, we realized, well, why can't we do this with other industries? Why can't, I mean, everybody's trying to shorten that supply chain. Let's create some kind of online portal for this to happen. And so we've created what's called Connects Oklahoma. It's C-O-N-N-E-X, Connects Oklahoma. We are almost to 500 manufacturers now that are on this new portal. And it allows for those who make products within the state to talk to each other and to find out what those capacities are right here within our borders and keep those dollars here more closely. Tied to where the businesses are. There's only two other states that we know of that has something like this right now, Utah and Florida, but we have more companies in Oklahoma on our portal even than those other states do. So it could be an opportunity for us as well.
You know, they say necessity, what is it? Necessity breeds invention. Ted, I want to come to you. You and Daniel were talking earlier about seeing, I think Daniel had seen all the ships out in, where was that, Daniel?
Long Beach.
And we have the worker shortage that causing this. What about the worker shortage? Let's get more into that. And what might this mean for the future of the shipping industry in America?
Yes, that is such a great question. So I'll come back to what Brent was just talking about. He captured those costs very nicely. When you think about trans-Pacific transport on those intermodals, cargo vessels, we're seeing prices 10 times what they normally would be. And it has to be paid, otherwise there's no transport. There was literally a shortage of cargo ships. There was a shortage of intermodal containers. And so now when we talk about that backup, and you've heard in the news about potential solutions around even the National Guard helping with the driving, that speaks to the shortage that we have with drivers to move containers from the port, right? Well, you get one influx that way, but when those containers are moved from the port, they have to go to a distribution center or to a fulfillment center or a yard to receive that as the vendors. They only have so much capacity. There was already a major shortage in the distribution network and in the fulfillment network of most companies when it comes to hiring employees to actually work those operations. So when you had, if we did have that big push of containers out of the ports, many of the distribution facilities on the West Coast, where we receive a lot of product from Asia, don't have the staffing yet to really manage that flow.
Yeah.
Right. And not only do you have to manage the inbound receipt of that product, but you have to actually turn it very quickly so that you could get the containers and the chassis ready to go back to the port, the empties to go back to the port, so that the ports can then bring out more. So this problem is really much more complex than just outbound drivers from the port.
Susan, if I may.
I was going to say, you said this was a delicate dance.
Yes.
And yeah, you're right in the heart of it.
I just want to come along beside what Dr. Washington said so recently, and this is not meant to be a political statement in any way, shape, or form. But recently we've heard attention all the way from the White House about opening the ports 24/7. The gentlemen who have been there more recent than I believe one of those port operators has said they've already been doing that for several weeks. So I just want to come along beside Dr. Washington's comments and say, yes, like a lot of America, we have workforce issues. We could use 80,000 drivers tomorrow morning. If they were safely certified with a CDL, we could put them in a driver's seat. That's expected to go to about 110,000 per year over the next decade. That's what we're looking at. However, we realize we're one of many in industry looking at workforce shortages. However, we have drivers. Oklahoma Trucking Association has member companies who operate at those ports. And those drivers are sitting there in the cab right now, idling, sometimes 3, 4, 5 hours because they're not allowed to come into the port yet. And the reason are the very things that Dr. Washington just mentioned, which is you can operate 24/7 if you'd like, but if I come into the port and I don't have the chassis for you to put that container onto a chassis, Susan, not to be insulting, is a trailer special for the container.
I was going to ask someone to explain that to me.
So those big boxes that come off of one of those ships, that's a container, and the container is lifted off by way of a crane operator and sat on a chassis, which is a trailer behind the cab of a truck. Okay. You don't just sit it on any type of equipment. Well, if those chassis are out spread around in distribution centers, in the truck yards that the doctor mentioned, if those centers are working 24/7, there's no equipment for people to bring those empties back in or to be able to utilize to offload those vessels. And I'm hearing as of yesterday, I was at a national trucking meeting, you have to have the equipment and you have to have every link optimization in this process. It's not just saying, oh, we're going to operate 24/7 and flip a magical switch. Those containers, Susan, when they come back as empties, think sort of like when I was a kid and you might want to recycle a Coke bottle, for example, or any bottle. The same is true there. But as a trucking company, you're going to get paid for that full shipping load, the 10 times we're talking about, outbound. You're not going to get paid so much bringing those empties back. And if you do, California is going to have some say-so about what you do with those containers. For example, recently, they've only been allowed to stack those too high wherever they can find places to put them. Recently, they relieved that and say you can stack them 4, sometimes 6 high, and that's temporary. So barriers like that are things, when I say that every part of the link needs to look at optimization, it goes on and on, but there's lots of areas for improvement.
Jim, while we're still, before I leave you quickly, is there a supply and demand issue where drivers are concerned in Oklahoma? And from what you just said, there is a need for more drivers, but are drivers leaving the industry?
So that, thank you for that question, Susan. The average age of the driver in the United States of America right now is about 58 years old. Unfortunately, their retirement and their options now to go to more high-paying positions is not being fulfilled on the front end. The front end of a driver becoming CDL certified today is about 35 years of age. What that means is anyone, and Brent Kessling can contribute to this, I'm sure, but anyone entering the workforce is probably going to look at that around 18 to early 20s years of age. So that means that for the truck driver coming in at age 35, they've probably already tried 2 or 3 other careers before we see them. So right now, there are talks of pilot programs in Washington, D.C. with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration and others to be able to look at a safe pilot program for 18-year-olds to be able to drive trucks. It is legal right now for an 18-year-old to have a certified commercial driver's license in the state of Oklahoma and any state, but you cannot cross a state line. You enter into interstate commerce at that point. So let's just stay with Oklahoma. You could drive from Idabel in one corner of the state up to the panhandle, say Boise City, for example, about a 9-hour drive. An 18-year-old can legally do that today, but they cannot leave Lawton, Oklahoma and drive into Wichita Falls, Texas. That would be illegal. You see the irony in that? So it's not really about safety. It's just about why do we have the barriers in place that we do? And so there's an area that trucking could look at, for example, to maybe try to alleviate some of these disruptions.
I'm hearing that as well, as we've been meeting with trucking companies, that a lot of those standards that they've historically held true to have been changing. Met with one last week that everybody they have ever hired had to be at least 25 years old with 3 years of experience, and they've at least bumped that down to 23 years, 2 years experience. Fortunately, we have great CDL training programs across the state, and hopefully we can convince more young people, just like Jim said, to get involved in them.
Does the Commerce Department have control over some of that?
Oh, we don't. The Career Tech system does a fantastic job with CDL training, but we also have a number of for-profit training facilities located all across the state. And some of them, in fact, several of them have capacity right now. If somebody's interested in making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year first day on the job, that's a great profession to look at.
With benefits.
With benefits, that's right.
I understand it's a lucrative field to get into. Daniel, I do have a question for you. The McClellan car system is, as you said, a uniquely inland port in the U.S. As other chains of supply are interrupted, does Oklahoma stand to find economic benefit in finding new routes inland for large shipping containers via the Gulf of Mexico?
Yes, I mean, the opportunity is there, and discussions are being had currently. It's all about changing what has been done in the past and going to a new direction. You know, we find it's comfortable to continue to doing the same thing always over and over and over again. And now with what's happened and all the supply chain issues, people are now reevaluating, well, why did we always do it that way? So conversations are being had. Oklahoma is a great place. We're right smack dab in the middle of the country with access You know, you got major interstates, almost everything has to cross east-west. You have major intermodal lines for both class ones on the BNSF and UP. You know, we sit right next to BNSF's mainline intermodal line that goes east-west from Long Beach to Chicago. I mean, daily I see containers on BNSF trains go right by my front door. So it's really just getting the contacts, having the right companies to realize that Oklahoma has the capability of doing it. We just need to show them and have those conversations.
Ted, I'm going to have the last question with you. If indeed necessity is the mother of invention, is this a turning point, especially that maybe a state like Oklahoma, which for all the reasons Daniel just mentioned, is positioned to maybe make the most of?
Yes, absolutely. This is a tremendous opportunity. And when you look at the U.S. economy, we saw the internet explode, right? Many businesses took off that were internet-based, dot-com-based. So you start to see some of that move forward. Amazon, I believe this summer, moved to Fortune 1, right? Because of the growth in internet sales. I listened to what Brent was talking about and the way Oklahoma has created innovative ways to connect companies to repurpose their capabilities, and that's tremendous. And when we think about those ports, that's another great opportunity. If we aren't in a position to change the laws to allow drivers to move product across state lines, which that should be something to be at least considered, we can move it within Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And not every state has been able to be as innovative as Oklahoma has been.
Well, I think the four of you need to get together and come up with the plan. We'll have you back and see what you hatched. Jim, you had something you wanted to add.
Sure, Susan. I would just suggest that one of the things that your viewers are aware of is that this supply chain disruption is not going to go away anytime soon. We're going to live with this for a little bit. If each of us had a magic wand, and we don't, but if we did and we could wave it right now, it's probably going to take well into next year, maybe the next half of next year. And that is if we start doing those optimization efforts now. So I don't say that to be negative, but I think to be fair to your viewers and to be realistic, we're going to live with this problem for a little while. The others may have a differing view, but that's my thoughts.
The supply chain operates like an accordion, and it'll catch up in certain areas and will be deficient in other areas. And Jim is right. It's going to take a while.
So we might indeed say have shortage of supplies, things we're used to having at the snap of a finger, not there.
Yeah, I'll add on, and they absolutely nailed that. You think about this product that comes from Vietnam, from China, any of our Asian bloc countries. They're going to take 6 weeks to get to the U.S., right? If they leave November 1st, they are getting to Long Beach, getting to Oakland, San Francisco, midway through December, right? And with the backups that we have, it'll take 2 weeks easily before it gets offloaded or really starting to move through the system. And that gets you to a distribution center, to a fulfillment center in a great scenario. And then you talk about the delays that we have with our carriers, right? Our UPS, our FedEx, our you name it. They have those same challenges. If product wasn't already ordered and isn't already en route, it's going to have challenges getting to us. We think about Christmas as one of those landmarks. Those carriers and those companies that are ahead, of course, they're in better shape. But then when we talk about going into next year, right, we are truly looking at probably well into mid-year next year and the latter part of next year before we truly see relief. And when you look at, I have frequent discussions with some of our bigger package deliverers. They're starting to build out capacity not only to try to make it through this year, but so that they can be well positioned for next year.
Wow.
So many of the companies are thinking in terms, although we're going to muscle through this year, they're really planning for next peak as a time to try to have relief.
Great information for all of us. I want to thank you all again for joining us with this great info and for your expertise. Thank you very much.
Support independent journalism in Oklahoma. Donate at oeta.tv/podcast. That's oeta.tv/podcast. From OETA, Oklahoma's home for public television.